Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Ryan Gates, 20 years of career experience, second generation firefighter, assistant chief with KC Fire Department in South Carolina, and co-owner of Soda City Training. My conversation with Ryan was fantastic. Upon entering into the fire service, he had individuals who were helping and guiding him in a way that he might not have caught on to just yet. When you're young and in the fire service, after a few years, some begin to think they know it all when the individual hasn't even scratched the surface. Sometimes, all it takes is one person to pull you aside and let you know you're messing up, to hopefully make you realize you need to change for the better. Ryan had one of those experiences that forever changed his outlook and continues to do so even today. I truly hope the listeners can take in and absorb some of the gems and nuggets Ryan's dropping. One of my favorite quotes from Ryan is, "You are what you check." With that, I present Ryan Gates.
My name is Ryan Gates. Currently the assistant fire chief with City of KC Fire Department, just outside of Columbia, greater Columbia metropolitan area. Got into the fire service. I guess you kind of call it a second generation. My grandfather was a firefighter in the Air Force. His last duty station was McIntyre Air National Guard Station, full-time active duty reserve. So I grew up going out there, riding ARFF trucks. And I know a lot of people say, "Ew, gross, ARFF trucks." But as a kid, to sit there and be able to hit buttons and sit in the center seat and, you know, maybe the Air Force might not like this, but as like an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, I could reach up there and steer the turret a little bit and squirt water. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Having the driver explain to me that they could inflate and deflate the tires based on where they were going, that was just awesome to me. I didn't know the difference like most kids didn't. Fast forward high school, didn't really know what I wanted to do, but the girl I was dating at the time, her dad was a police officer. Then plus I have a heavy military presence in my family. Obviously both grandparents were career military. So I kind of was falling into, what do I do? So at the time I liked working on cars, so ended up going to a tech school, getting a couple of certifications, started turning wrenches at a car dealership. Didn't like that too much at 18 years old, not making a lot of money, a lot of long hours, hard work, busted knuckles. It gave me a great sense of mechanics. But I turned a hobby into work, and it kind of ruined it. So I was looking for something else. Kind of started talking to my girlfriend's dad and was looking at like going into the army or, you know, something else. And he said, "Well, you're too young to go, you know, be a deputy. You gotta be 21. Have you thought about like the fire department? I know, you know, you've talked about your grandfather doing it and stuff." And I said, "Yeah." Thought about it a little bit. And he said, "Well, you are dating my daughter. You're out of high school. So why don't you try to do that first and stay in town?" And I said, "Yeah, that sounds like a good idea." I mean, 9/11 and the war on terror was kicked off. So he knew and I knew if I went to the army, I was going to go straight and get deployed. But kind of started talking to recruiter and the fire department at the same time. Ended up saying, "Hey, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go to my local fire department." Grew up in Irmo, South Carolina. Was still living in the area at the time. So I walked into Irmo Fire Department, and wonderful assistant fire chief Greg Mundy was sitting there. And if anybody knows Greg Mundy, he's just an awesome fireman's fireman. If you look up operations chief in the dictionary, you're going to see a picture of Greg Mundy's mustache. And at 18, he's kind of intimidating, even though he's a shorter guy. So he took a meeting with me and sat across the table and gave me the, "So what are you doing here, kid?" And kind of started telling him a life story. He goes, "Oh, okay, that's great. Come back tomorrow." I said, "Oh, okay, cool. All right, thanks. Thanks for your time." So came back tomorrow, came back the next day. He said, "Oh, good. You're late. Be back here earlier tomorrow." Well, damn, okay. So I came back again, knocked on his door, and he said, "Oh, I didn't think you'd show up today. Cool, go out into the bay and start learning where everything is on the truck." So that was like my first introduction of I couldn't ride the truck, I couldn't do anything until I knew the apparatus and knew the people. That was how Chief Bundy was. Couple of good mentors there. I don't know if Scott Deloy listens to this, but I still remember him taking me up in the tower basket and showing me how everything worked. So to make a long story long, hung out there about between 4 and 6 months, and City of Columbia Fire Department was hiring. Put in an application with them. At the time, I don't know how hiring worked, other than the chief at the time said, "I use the target, and I put everybody who's a city resident gets application first. Everybody that's a county resident gets an application second. And then if I don't have enough people, I go outside of that." So I just called him about twice a week until he gave me a job. Persistence pays off, and he answered the phone one day and said, "Son, if I give you a job, will you quit calling me?" I said, "Yes, sir. The only reason I'll call you again is to ask you where to show up." So, went through the application process there, agility test, physical, got hired on. 8 week recruit school back in the day. Came out fire two. Got assigned to Engine 11 out of recruit school. Pretty busy downtown engine. Kind of one of those places that everybody kind of wanted. It was a desired area. Then slowly made my way up the ranks. I guess some people say slow, some people say fast. Got a lot of experience, got a lot of opportunity to float around different trucks. Columbia is a big area, 750 square miles, 32 firehouses. So you basically get to, I don't know, for lack of a better term, write your own ticket depending on your level of involvement and how much passion you have. I was lucky enough to kind of get picked up, started riding Rescue One and Ladder Seven. That was kind of the next progression after, I guess, making an okay impression at an engine company. So said, made my way up to the ranks. Had a great assignment when I made captain. Went to Engine 6. Spent a good bit of time as a firefighter there. Apartment haven, nothing but wrecks and apartment fires. And, just that's where I guess I cut my teeth. A lot of mutual aid calls. It's right on the border with Lexington County and Irmo Fire. So still got to run with those guys a lot. Had great relationships with them. Then got the opportunity to go back to Ladder 7 for, let's see, probably what, as a captain, 4 years, 5 years-ish. Had an awesome crew there. That's where I really learned how to be a boss. And that's where I really accredit or attribute most of, the leadership lessons that I learned. Had some really, really good, hardcore firemen that taught me a lot, taught me how to manage high performing people for sure, just because that's what that rig attracted. And then it also pushed me because I had to keep up with those guys. Not that I'm super old, but man, some days when you got a rig full of pit bulls, man, I mean it sometimes is hard to keep up. But we kept the standard high. Had a lot of haters, but also still, I would hope that a lot of people said, if shit hit the fan, that's the truck I want there. Shout out to my boy Blake Cartier, still keeping the seven truck strong over there. He's done some great stuff. Still keep in touch with a lot of the guys over there. In 2000, late 2001. I left the city of Columbia, came over to the city of Casey, right across the river. At the time, they were splitting from a public safety department, so they were expanding. I got hired there as the first battalion chief, kind of to help with the transition. If everybody doesn't know what public safety is, it was cops who are dual certified as firefighters. So you had a couple of guys in the firehouse, you know, between 3 and 5, depending on staffing for the day. And then the cops came in and supplemented when a fire call came out. As they got busier and busier, they said, this is no longer, you know, sustainable. So they split. I got hired on there, moved up to assistant chief 3 years ago, so 2022, and really just started building a fire department. You know, they're all the, you know, SOPs and SOGs were straight out of a, you know, it read like a novel. You know, thou shall not force door until PSO on scene. It was a little weird, a little scary, but at the same time, it's been an honor and really a huge learning experience building a little fire department. And we're still doing it. We're still learning. We're finally fully staffed, knock on wood, we find some there. And you know, the culture's finally taken off. You know, but working with other departments, because we run mutual aid with City of Columbia, West Columbia, and Lexington County mainly. We've even been over into Irmo's jurisdiction, and you know, we haven't been over to Batesburg-Leesville, but we're all kind of a consolidated, we're under a consolidated dispatch with Lexington County, so it's, you know, automatic aid countywide, which is awesome. You know, you call, we come. There's not a lot of borders in jurisdiction until it comes time to do reports or investigations. That's the only time borders come in. And yeah, I really appreciate all the relationships that I've made and built in the last 3 years to make that successful, because there's no small department out there that can do it alone. And even larger county departments, when you have, you know, SPDs or municipalities in, you know, completely consumed in your area, they can't do it alone either. So you have to have those relationships.
Okay. All right. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Casey, the size, personnel, how many stations, apparatus, things of that nature?
Yeah. So City of Casey is roughly 15 square miles. Most of it's residential, have a handful of industry. Two interstates kind of run around our border. We have I-77 and I-26. Like I said, we butt right up against City of Columbia at the river. And then West Columbia shares the other side of our border. County shares all the rest, Lexington County. We are only one station. We run two apparatus and a battalion chief on the daily. So we run 3, 3, and 1, usually engine, ladder, battalion. And right now we have some issues with ladder truck, but like I said, relationships. We have a borrowed ladder right now, which is great.
Okay.
But we're still running it. And so 7 per day is our staffing. Minimum staffing, we do drop down to 6. And that's dependent upon what apparatus we have available. We'll either go 4 on the engine and then put kind of a squad in service to run the lighter calls and keep the battalion in, or depending on the staffing, we'll drop the battalion, and that battalion chief will either ride down as an officer, or if the battalion chief's off, we'll usually just ride the two apparatus, and then I'll cover or use our mutual aid to cover the chief spot. Yeah, that's pretty much where we're at right now. Looking to grow, you know, like everybody, we're fighting for staffing, fighting for more people. I come from, you know, 4-man engines and 4-man truck world, and it gives me the heebie-jeebies every time that we roll out with 3 and 3, just because you got the officer doing a lot of work, especially if they're your first due on the line, and that officer doesn't have a lot of opportunity to supervise, especially with the new guys, and we have a lot of youth in the department right now with not a crazy amount of experience, but you know, it's a lot to supervise a probie and be the first two boss. So
Right.
we're working on getting that staffing up where I'd like to see it, but.
Okay. I'm assuming a first due structural residential box comes in, you're getting your engine, your ladder, your battalion chief, and automatic aid.
Yeah, luckily we have a count, what we call a countywide GOG. All the operations chiefs and fire chiefs from the 5 departments in Lexington County got together. As said, the initial one was about 6 years ago, and we recently, first of this year, 2025, released a update to the guideline. So no real boundaries as far as structure fires go. It's the closest, four engines, ladder, and three chiefs, typically right off the rip. It's still being adjusted. We're working out the kinks. Like any new plan, is not perfect when we roll it out. We know that. And, constantly adjusting and, just figuring out what works. So far, we've had very little hiccups with the new rollout. Not everybody likes the order of arrival, but we'd have due assignments. So first due engine is fire attack duties. Second due is usually water supply and second line. Third due engine's writ. Where I'm at, the truck's on scene pretty quick. I'm lucky to have my truck. West Columbia's got a truck, and County's got a truck right down the road. It's not uncommon to have two and three ladder companies on scene because they're coded in CAD as an engine also. So we're getting those searches done pretty fast. Usually, the ladder company, Lexington County, will sometimes ride up four because they have a little bit better staffing. So they started splitting crews, which has been awesome. I don't think I ever get the luxury of splitting crews, but usually that first two truck crew goes in and completes a primary search, and fourth through engine usually goes into like a manpower pool or kind of fits in wherever. Chief officers, first officer takes command, second officer comes in and either goes as a downrange supervisor or a safety officer. Leave that up to the IC to determine that, and then the third two can get assigned downrange or hops in as a advisor or accountability officer, as they like to call it. So that's pretty much our normal structure fire assignment from there.
Okay. And are all those agencies using AVL, or is it just kind of does your 911 center just kind of look at distances from the incident?
So everything is kind of old school box. So it's every
Gotcha.
territory like Casey has. I have A, B, and C territory. So it's 32 deep run out. And then after that, it just pulls the next closest, next closest, next closest, depending on that. We do have MDTs. The AVL feature is one that's not turned on at the moment, if that makes sense. But no, dispatch can see where everybody is if they pull up the right screen. But typically, most days, we're very lucky. Guys are listening to the radios. They want to go to fires in our surrounding areas, so it's more of, beating the pit bulls off the box instead of trying to get people to come, unless it's just like a 2 or 3 a.m. call and everybody's, asleep. But typically somebody will be up and monitoring and be on top of it.
And so I'm kind of gonna go back a little bit. You mentioned how you had mentors in your life, individuals that struck a chord with you and with how you should view the fire service. So how important is that ability to go out and find those firefighters you want to emulate?
Oh, you'll get philosophical on me. I think it's almost everything is emulation. We find those people gravitate towards those people who we agree with or who we want to be like. That's good and bad, of course. I was lucky when I started kind of getting pulled to those specialty companies. I was surrounded by people who pushed me and who called me out on my bullshit, or hey, a quick story on that. I was on Rescue One riding the back, and anybody who knows Columbia Rescue One, I mean, that's there, you're on everything. That was the draw to go to Rescue One or Ladder 7 in Columbia, because any call that you see on the news, one or both of those companies is going to be on scene. So I wanted to be there, and I've been riding for a few weeks while a couple of the guys were out on vacation. I think one was hurt, so some move ups and everything. And I was kind of floated in. And after a couple calls, I remember going to the hospital for the lift assist of a very large bariatric patient. And we were helping him get the large patient off the floor who had unfortunately deceased. And I hesitated. And apparently, I had hesitated before because the captain, after that call, pulled me in his office and said, "Hey, man, I think this is going to be your last shift floating in here. Thank you for what you do. Appreciate, you giving us a chance to mesh well with you, but I don't think you're what we're looking for." And of course, that was a gut check. I immediately said, Well, what can I do? Is there any way I can stay here? And he goes, man, you just got to find that extra gear. You got to jump in there. You can't hesitate. And just be more aggressive, man. Like, that's all I ask. And I said, okay, well, can you give me one more shift? And he said, okay, I'll give you one more shift. And from there, it was, I had to kind of earn it. I really, found that ability to drop a gear, asked a couple of the more senior guys, hey, what the heck do I need to do? And they handed me a book. And I mean, not like a book, but like a binder. And they called it the Book of Knowledge. And it was literally page by page of every piece of equipment, like the manufacturer's book of Hurst equipment, of Ajax tool, Petrogen torch, you name it. And it was like, know this stuff. You don't know how to have, you don't necessarily know how to how have to know how to use it perfectly, but when I call for it, you need to know where it is and how to set it up for the guys that know how to use it. And I've kind of taken that on with my career of, hey, I might not be the best operator, but I can be one hell of a gopher until I learn how to do it and earn my spot and learn it. Because you can't be the master of all the trades. That team aspect is huge there. But finding those mentors, finding those people that push you and that you want to emulate, and then asking them, hey, don't, my message out there to everybody is, don't be scared to go ask somebody to go out for a cup of coffee or a beer and pick their brain. Or, you got to go out and find mentors. Mentors just aren't going to find you. I mean, we could go down this rabbit hole big time. Over the years, I can scroll through my phone and find some rank somewhere, a chief, a fireman, on a quint, on a tiller, somewhere. I could pick up the phone and call them and be like, hey man, let me pick your brain for a second. Or, hey, I'm dealing with this situation, chief. Can you help me out? I mean, that is by far the greatest part about the fire service that I love, is like, especially, kind of building SOGs and everything at a new department. What department has something that's working? And we are overly okay, I think, with plagiarism, which is awesome. Nobody cares if you steal their ops, their guidelines. So pick up the phone and call them. They're more than happy to help you with workouts, with hose loads, what worked for them, what didn't work for them. Somebody out there has tested this hose and done flow rates, or has all the data on alka heavies versus duos. That research is a lot of times already done. So all you got to do is go out there and dig it up. And don't be afraid to call people. Don't be afraid, like I said, to ask somebody for some mentorship. Hey man, I'm struggling. What would you do if you were in this situation? I know you've been there before. It doesn't matter. You don't know me from Adam, but most of these guys, especially the good ones, are going to say, hey man, don't worry about it. I don't have time today, but what are you doing tomorrow? Let me give you a call. That's been my experience, and that's where I've learned the most, I think. But conversely, I've learned a lot from bad bosses and from, the shitbags, if you will. Learning what not to do a lot of times is more important than what to do, because it's like, okay, that guy messed up. I'm not doing that. I'm not going to fall into the same trap. And unfortunately, I mean, I've messed up, but also I've learned from a lot of my mess ups. I've had some hard landings and some soft landings. But I tell everybody, they're like, the reason I'm giving you this advice is because I've done it before, or I've messed up and or seen someone go down the road you're going down, whether it's personal life, finances, drinking, mental health, or just on the job stuff of not being that guy that takes the initiative. Why aren't you there 15 minutes early and 15 minutes late? What's the deal? You're single. You got a girlfriend. Like, tell her you got to go home at 11, and you got to have 6, 7 hours of sleep before you go in, because the people out there and my guys are expecting me to show up and be at 100%. And if you're giving them less than that, you might want to find another job to do, because this job will kill you quick. Unfortunately, I've been to a couple firefighter funerals, and I don't want to go to another one. Probably will, unfortunately, but.
Unfortunately, yeah.
And that's kind of where I've transitioned now, later in my career, is kind of getting those phone calls from a couple of people that want me to be their mentor. And that's humbling, because a lot of times those guys are going to go out and implement exactly what you told them to do. And like I said, it's an honor, but it's also scary. You better be right. So, mentorship is almost everything, I really think. You know, you are who you surround yourself with. So, might as well surround yourself with the best and the people that are going to make you better. I grew up playing sports, was always the most okayest at everything. Good enough to make the team, but not necessarily to always be a starter. But I didn't get better by playing with the little kids or playing with JV. I got better by playing with varsity. You got better playing with the guys who are better than me because you pick up on what's better. And at the end of the day, if you're on the same team, they're going to give you that mentorship. Hey, make sure you line up your knuckles. Make sure and rotate that bat over, you know. Or, hey, I notice you have weak wrist strength. Here's some exercises to do. And you can translate that into the fire service. Somebody's struggling to throw ladders. Hey, man, let's go do some squats. Let's go do some shoulder press and get you know, to a point where you can chunk this, you know, 28 or 35 by yourself. Because we said we're three-man staffing. You're going to be chunking 35s by yourself. That's one of the things I've always disliked, we'll say, about, you know, academy standards and national standards. Two-man 24. Really?
Yeah, for
I've never thrown a
real.
two-man 24. And also, if you try to throw a two-man 24, good luck because you're just gonna screw it up because that is not a two-man throw. So that is not a standard that I preach, not a standard I allow. I mean, two-man on a 35, I'll allow
Yeah, I
that.
get that. I get that.
But 24s and 28s, those are one-man ladders, man. You know, that's where the mentorship, and don't just sit there and laugh at them. Once they drop the ladder on their head and wear it like a necklace once, cool, let's have a good laugh. Take a picture, you know, put it on their retirement photo one day or something like that, or the slideshow. But after you get done laughing, man, you got to go out there and mentor them. You got to go out there and make them better because that guy might be throwing the ladder for your kids, for you who just got caught in a flashover and you need to bail out. I don't want to jump out two or three stories. I'd rather slide down a ladder, wouldn't you? So, mentorship, like I said, if I could just reiterate it again, find a mentor. Or if you have a mentor, find someone to mentor if you're into that position. Because there's always one more hour in the day. There's always, you know, an extra minute to show somebody how to clean this all right. Or, you know, hey, don't put the loop through the bail of the nozzle. Don't do it. I mean, that's like one of those little things. It's like, oh yeah, it looks cool. It looks neat on the truck. If that's what your department requires, cool, do whatever. But also know I've broken bales and, you know, had to pull a second line because engineer charged it too quick before I could pull that bale out. All those little things add up to huge things when the bell rings and you have to perform. So emulating and understanding why we do the little things is huge. And the way you get that is through mentorship.
Facts. Okay. Awesome. Awesome. All right. So, as you got some years on the job, and you started to see how things work within organizations, what triggered you, or what made you decide, like, hey, I'm gonna try to go up to the next rank, to the next step?
Overall, this is going to sound bad, at least initially, is I didn't want some people being my boss.
So I'll stop you there and say, it's funny how many interviews I've had, and not even like interviews as well, but like outside conversations. And that seems to be the biggest answer right there, is because I didn't want to work for this person.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a strong motivator because I've kind of come to learn that if you're the one who identifies a problem, then you're usually the best one, at least initially, that's equipped to handle that problem because you already know what it is. And, you know, in unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, in the fire service, the only big real way to make change, or at least on paper, is to move up, is to have a little bit more authoritative influence there. You can do a lot from being a senior man, backstep fireman, but there's going to be a meeting, there's going to be a committee that you go in, and at the end of the day, it's that guy's just a fireman. We try to combat that, especially people like once I'm at the level I'm at, you know, when you get into administration or you get into that BC level, or even as a station boss, everybody's got good ideas. It's just the execution of them sometimes needs some polishing. And you know, I tell my guys like, man, I don't have enough hours in the day to come up with all the great ideas, but you got to give me the ammo to shoot down range. You know, I'll help you with your ideas, but you got to help me out. Like, it's a lot of days I'm drowning, and I've used that to them. Like, hey, I need your help. Like, I can do a lot. I can support you, but I don't have enough hours in the day to create a video on a new hose load you want to do, man. I support you all day long, but that's not my job. That's your job. You know, you're the engine boss. You want to change a hose load, bro? I will support you all day. I'll even go out there and pull it with you once you get what you want done. But when it comes to taking that next step, you said, unfortunately, it comes down between I know I'm better than that guy, and that's maybe what pushes you to do it. I don't know. Everybody's different. Then for me, as I moved up, you know, past captain, and I was looking at taking the battalion chief test, I knew that that was the next step in order to have positive influence in more than just my little seven truck bubble, as I called it back then. You can influence a lot in your station, but you're never going to be able to have a greater influence until you take on greater responsibility. And you can influence more people when you go up more, but you also have to be a good mentor. Like I said, going back to mentorship, you know, Simon Sinek quote, I love quotes, so might say a few more by the end of this thing. But it's leadership is not a license to do less. It's a responsibility to do more, or an obligation to do more. So if you're taking a promotion thinking you're going to have the easy road, you might as well not take the test, because it's usually double the amount of work with twice the amount of responsibility as well. And I think some of the young guys that I've seen, and sorry, I'm calling them young because, you know, calling myself old, I guess, but you know, they get 1 or 2 years in, and it's like, hey, when can I ride the seat? I'm like, bro, you can ride the seat whenever you want, but understand what you're taking on. Like, it's not just riding the seat. Same thing with driving. I've said for a long time, moving up to driver is probably the single biggest jump in responsibility that you'll ever take, because you go from just riding the back step, man, I got to pull off the med bag, I got to know my equipment, I got to pull the line, you know, I got to make sure my stretch is good, maybe a little bit of size up, whatever, but overall I got a boss that's going to, you know, kind of tell me what to do. If I screw up, he's right behind me, he's going to help me out. You move up to that in that boss position, or that driver position, you got to get the rig there. That's the most important thing, is making it to the scene. And I was an aggressive driver, I'm not going to lie, but I always tell my guys, we make time up getting out of the house on turnout times fast. You don't make up much time on the road. You can only take you know, a 30 to 50 ton fire truck and make it go so fast. You know, 3 or 4 miles an hour on the road is not going to make up time. But if I can get my turnout time from 2 minutes down to 62 seconds, that can make a difference. And then once you get there, once you get your people there safely and efficiently, and without hitting anybody else on the road, then I now have to be a pump operator or apparatus operator, operate that stick or that tower, and I got to be good at it, because if I lose water, guess what? Fire doesn't go out. People get hurt. People die, and makes everybody look like an idiot because you're one guy on the pump panel. You gotta understand that's a huge, huge responsibility. And like I said, that's the single biggest jump. Everything from, you know, I'm not a seatbelt Nazi or anything, but everything from, you know, the policies, the door policy. Had a guy the other day, not mention his name, but they got a little overzealous and they came out the door a little too quick, and they hit the door to the firehouse. You know, it wasn't all the way up when he pulled the apparatus out. Guess what? Accidents happen, man. It's cool. I understand. I've had a couple of apparatus incidents myself, but you didn't get to go to that call. Luckily, it was a minor call, but you got stuck in the station. You had to back up. We had to pull the door off. You know, we had to break a panel off the door just to get the truck out. Luckily, it didn't damage the truck and take it out of service. But there's that ripple effect. that I know I didn't understand it as a 2 or 3 year driver, but your actions at a very low level have a huge impact later on down the road, and you don't fully grasp that, I think, sometimes. And as you move up, you get to really understand what you're getting into, or at least try. You're never going to fully understand it, but you have to be good at the job you're leaving, because it's now your responsibility to mentor and prepare that next person for the job. I used that scene in that's a Mel Gibson movie. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Braveheart?
Brain Fart. I'll probably do a
No,
couple of those.
I said, is it Braveheart?
No, not Braveheart. He's the cavalry officer in Vietnam.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's in my head right now.
I'll think of it in a second. But he says, the helicopters are coming in, landing, and he goes in and he goes to the sergeant and goes, "Boom, you're dead. What you gonna do? Boom, you're dead. Next guy, then you're down to the two privates. Well, what are you gonna do?" He said, "Get out of the chopper." He's like, "Yeah, get out of the chopper." And then after they take off and he waves them off, he says, "What do we learn, gentlemen?" He said, "You'll be landing under fire. What happens if, your officer goes down, your NCO goes down? I need everybody to teach the man above you and below you your job, so that when you go down, which some of you will, that you can still complete the mission, and that mission first mentality. And we have to take that serious, especially with the recruitment retention problem that I think everybody's facing, is you're going to move up fast. You might not want to drive, but guess what? I need you to learn how to drive. I'm going to do it safely and effectively, and I'm not going to put you in a position for failure, or if you truly don't have the aptitude, I have to be that guy right now in my agency to say, hey, let's do some remediation on him. Let's not push him right now. But then other guys who have an aptitude, hey, I gotta have you step up. I gotta challenge you. That's my job as a leader, as I see it, is pushing the people to where I might be able to, or you might be able to see them moving up, even though they might not be prepared in their head. I relate a lot of leadership to being a parent, and I really got a good understanding of how to be a better leader when I was a parent, when I first became a parent, because it's truly selfless service. I mean, I tell my wife all the time, "Good Lord, the kids are annoying me today. I want to kill them. If that God didn't make them so cute, I'd want to eat them." I mean, it's purely, but at the same time, I would cut open my chest and give the heart to either one of my daughters, my heart to either one of my daughters right now, no questions asked. And I think as you move up and as you take those next steps, you got to be prepared to sacrifice a little bit for your crew, or you're probably taking it for the wrong reason. So,
Love it.
long
No,
answer.
I love it. I love it. And hell, you really hit on it. So let's kind of dive into it. Recruitment and retention. What do you see the fire service doing good on, and what do you see areas that we can improve when it comes to that?
And we're recruiting the hell out of some people. We recruit the hell out of people, but they're, from my experiences, they've been other departments' people. We're real good at department robbing, and I've seen that now for the last probably 5, 6 years. People jumping for $1,000, $2,000, a benefit here, benefit there, and grass is greener. And then a lot of times, grass doesn't end up being that much greener, or you make a mistake. I don't know. One thing that I've always had, I'm a pretty loyal person. I'm not going to jump for $1,000 or, 2472. Well, I might jump for 2472. That'd be awesome. But, 2448 versus 4896, unless there's really something going on, that schedule's not that much better in my mind. But, I think we just got to do a better job of retention in order to recruit people out of, say, we have high school programs. That or guys are coming out, "Oh yeah, I'm fire too." Great. But they really have done nothing but an incipient burn in a burn building. And we're hiring these guys, and these fire chiefs are salivating over some of them. And the city managers or council people, fire boards say, "Why don't we just pull these guys?" And it's like, guys, you don't understand. I mean, it's 6 months to a year before I can let any of these guys operate independently, other than cleaning the toilet or, doing a basic checkoff on a truck. Yep, is the equipment there? Is my air pack full? The basic stuff. And I think a lot of that comes down to education of the like we the rank and file have to educate fire chiefs or boards or councils on the recruitment issue we're having, and all we're doing is robbing Peter to pay Paul if I'm constantly recruiting from the other department or the smaller department or the bigger department with, oh, well, yeah, we can get him for 5 grand. Oh, I can make him, oh, he's making 50. I can promise him 55. Great. Well, that's only going to be a short-term fix. Because remember, anytime you move, or there's a reason someone's paying you more. They're paying you more to shovel more bullshit. And I mean, I say, I mean, I didn't get, bugles. I got plungers, man. I mean, that's I'm plunging problems all the time. My box alarms are sometimes they're house fires, but more often than not, 99 out of 100 of my problems are administrative fires. Said it's the guys being late to work, guys not showing up, not going to a class, making sure that I got enough money for training, that we got a car to send them into class, we got enough uniforms. God, for logistics is the bane of my existence. But at the end of the day, guys need uniforms. Guys can't come to work in, white t-shirt and blue jeans every day. That's not the expectation of the public. That's not the expectation I have. So, I don't know the magic pill, but I know the magic pill is not continuing to rob people from other departments, because we're pulling out of the same pool
That's
over and
right.
over and over, and nobody overall usually ends up happier. There are the, you can pick up some good guys that, maybe are terminated from another department, or are truly having a bad time, maybe mistreated somewhere. I don't know, but that's the rare case, not what we need to rely on. So, one thing we're doing at Casey, it's been a long road to hoe, but we got a grant to get explorers. And my whole thing with the explorer stuff, I got two captains that are kind of running it, and about ready to start our first real, maybe go out and seek out the people from the Innovation Center and say, hey, we're gonna take four or five guys or girls and say, hey, come on in. And we're not just going to show you how to be a Casey firefighter. I want you to learn the skills. And when West Columbia hires, when Columbia hires, when somebody in the area is hiring, I want you to be able to walk in that door and interview well and get on the job and then say, hey, the guys at Casey taught me how to do this. That I think is probably going to be more of the pipeline as I see it, because I really, really don't see going to college job fairs and picking up dudes with engineering degrees. Our schedule and our lifestyle is not going to be white collar that they expect. And I guess the other side to that is it used to be for me and maybe guys around my time that that 15 to 25 year range when I got on the job, it was more about benefits and pay and how many fires do I go to, good station assignment. Now it's like, hey, how many days off a year do I get? I can't tell you how many times I've gotten that in an interview of, yeah, well, I got this cruise already planned, man. So I can pick up, but I can't start, or that'll be like 3 months in. Can I still go on this cruise? You know what I'd have been told? And not saying this is right, but you don't get a day
Bye.
off for 6. Bye. Okay, thanks for applying. Well, wait. Yeah, thanks for applying. And then your name's kind of mud. I'm not saying that's right. That we I actually try to, if long as they tell me that, like, hey, I have this family vacation and I know I'm not supposed to take off for the first 6 months, but it's month five. If I'm doing okay, is there a possibility I can swap some time or get off? It's about, more or less, it's about how it's presented. If the person's a good guy, if they're doing well, they're on the right track. But if week two, you're like, ah, man, I gotta pop off sick. Heck no. I send guys home probably a couple times a year when they come in and they look like ass. And it's like, hey, man, I love you. I thank you for trying to come in, but I can't have you infect everybody else with the flu. Go home, take the shift off. I got you. And I think that's where I try to empower my officers and even everybody, like, encourage them. Use your sick time, use your vacation time. That's what it's there for. If you need it, go be with your family, go stay home with a sick kid, but don't bring it into the firehouse, or don't, if it's something that's going to affect your performance, stay home, but don't abuse it. And I really respect the guys who come in and they try, but the us as the people in the firehouse got to look at them and say, hey man, we got you today. Go home. I know you're
Right.
feeling like crap. And I don't want to get sick either because I hate being sick.
Yeah. No, that's 100% facts. Okay. You mentioned it for sure. You hit the nail on the head with the recruitment and retention. But I think too, what can set an organization apart from the others are how they allow their firefighters to be firefighters and how they view the jobs. Like, we all know the organizations that are, even though they might not be top pay, it might be middle of the road pay, or hell, even some are the bottom pay, but the culture, the way they allow their firefighters to do things, to me, that sets them apart.
Absolutely. I'll use the example, and I've told the assistant chief of IRMO, their pay not that great, man. It's just not, and they're handcuffed with it, but they have a great culture. They have good trucks, and they have a good culture. So they equip their guys with the tools, and I think that's part of retention, is you can retain people by making the suck worth it by enough money, or you can create a good enough culture or good enough schedule, enough fringe benefits, send them to enough training, call volume, whatever the case is, find out what would keep those people there. Hey, if I might not have the salary money, but damn, man, hey, you know what? What kind of boots do you guys like? We don't have to use Globe, or we don't have to use Hikes. What do you want? What do you want there? Like, or find the little things that could keep them there. Because, like you said, if I can't have the money side, at least I can have the culture side. Give them a little bit of autonomy. Don't SOG or policy them into a corner and let them have a little bit more freedom. Hey, maybe, I know being in government, they hate reoccurring cost. Reoccurring cost is what you try to avoid. If I can do one-time cost through a grant or through a fundraiser or anything else, 99 out of 100 times, the leadership of a city or council is going to approve it. So, we just tried to get pushed through with through our 1% fund of, once a guy's been there 2 years, we give him a leather. It didn't end up getting passed because of, the red tape there, but we're looking at ways like that. Our backup plan now is to try to give them extrication jackets, like a nice, good USAR approved jacket, where South Carolina, it's the summer, it's hot, so when they get out for a wreck or woods fire or something like that, they can toss on that jacket. They're still approved and they're still safe, but it's something that's a little bit more of a badge of honor, like, hey, I got this awesome sweet jacket that's a little lighter than my turnout coat, but I can put full of hand tools, and I can wear it on an extrication, I can wear it out on, even a med call or whatever else, anything that you need, just a little extra protection. And they just look cool. I mean, I'm one of those guys. Like, at the end of the day, I do like the t-shirts and the lights. I mean, I got to spec out my buggy, and it looks like a Volipop ride, man. I like lights. So any little thing like that that we can do, I think that's probably going to be more the future, because, looking at the way money and taxes are going right now, we're going to hit a small recession before things are going to get worse, before they get worse, and then they're going to get better. So we're going to have to look and be creative, because there's going to be departments that are still going to scalp your people, if things don't get better. And I've always been a proponent in saying that the time that a guy starts looking, usually you've already lost him, and it takes a lot to reel that guy back in, because I'm not going to look if I'm happy. So at the time I'm looking, I mean, yeah, everybody likes to see the job postings from, I think it's Texas right now. Texas is paying their firefighters like 70 grand for firefighter EMT starting out, no experience. And I'm like, I can't compete with that, man. I can't even be in the same zip code as that. So if that's what you're expecting, I suggest you move to Texas. But then maybe that's the other side of it, is, having expectations set by people like me at an administrative level. Like, hey, this is the expectation. And I've had the discussion with some people over the years of, No one lied to you about your pay. And this is not private sector. Just because you're a top performer doesn't mean you get to make more than the guy in another position or that's been here a couple of years longer. I wish it worked like that, but it doesn't. I have to justify your pay in a form that has to go up through the city manager and he has to approve it. And it's usually through education or certification pay. That's how the bean counters look at it. I'm sorry, but I damn sure will write you a hell of an essay and a hell of a justification letter for why I'm giving you that extra 2, 3, 4, 5%. But you got to help me out too. You got to show some value. You have to go out there and, be the John F. Kennedy. Don't talk to me about what your fire department can do for you. Talk to me about what you can do for your fire department, because the better we can look to those managers, the easier it is for me to fight for you, man. It really is. So when we get the accolades and the, Miss Betty sends in, her thank you letter, that means a lot. So if you can encourage your people, I know we set up in our website just a contact the fire chief, drop down box. Hey, good, right, wrong, bad, indifferent, whatever. And then every time I get a good one, I send it up to the city manager. I ask him to read it at the council meeting. Let them see that we're out there, that we're not only just running fire calls, we're doing lift assists, we're putting in smoke detectors. Little Johnny came by the station and we took a time to show him the truck and pull the booster line off, let him squirt some water. I know not everybody can do that because of risk management and everything else, but if you can, those are the things that really make it a lot easier. Like, I just went to council and asked for $1 million for a fire engine. They unanimously approved it. Don't know if it was just because of absolute need, but we were able to sell it right and have enough clout behind it. So they knew that when we come to them, it's not a want, it's really a need. I try to save that.
Side note, really, $1 million for an engine now? Fucking unbelievable. I just think back in the day what $1 million could get you when you ask for not even an aerial, but like to me that'd be unheard of, a $1 million engine back in the day, but it's crazy how times have changed now.
Yeah, we're looking at 30 and 40% across the board from 3 years ago. So about 10 to 15% a year for the last 3 or 4 years.
That's wild. But all right, I'm gonna get off that soapbox. But
Yeah.
one thing you did mention earlier, and it kind of struck me because I found myself in this situation. So, when you talked about how when you chose to move up, you did it for a couple different reasons. But one of the things you hit on was the fact that if you want to affect a little bit of change, rank could play a factor. And I get it, but I also look at it as you can have a 20-year captain on either the engine, ladder, rescue, whatever the case may be, right? And you have a really engaged, motivated firefighter that's, let's just say they're on the same truck, maybe a different shift or whatnot. But if the firefighter is going to excel where they're going to take these classes, they're going to these conferences, they're listening to new ideas, they're bringing it back to their department. Granted, so all right, let's just say you have that, but then you have the 20-year captain who has been on that truck for that long, but hasn't really done anything else. How can you say to the young firefighter, like, hey, we understand your value, but then again, yeah, we really don't. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things, like, I'm not trying to take away, but I think organizations need to also look at, all right, if you're going to be an officer or whatever you're assigned to, whatever the case may be, you need to know the new information, the new technology, because the fire service is always evolving. Like, so what I'm trying to say is, I hate the fact that we can look at a 15, 20, 25-year captain that once they got in that position has never really done anything, but you have the 5, the 7, the 10, the 15-year firefighter who's going out and seeing what's out there, seeing new tactics, bringing new ideas, and you're going, just because your rank isn't this, we're going to take your word with a grain of salt.
Oh yeah, that's a huge cultural issue. Larger department, I'll tell you right now, everybody knows larger departments, you can hide. You can be that 20-year captain. You eventually snake your way over into a slower station, and then guess what else you're going to attract?
The slugs.
The slugs. Yeah, because
Yeah.
I mean, like-minded people are, they're going to say, "Yeah, we're going to go. We're going to do the bare minimum. How fast can we do our checks and roll sticks on the Xbox, man?" And I think that's where people like me, my job gets hard. I can tell you right now, as battalion chief, I made mistakes the way I maybe presented it. But if I walked into one of my firehouses and the guys were playing Xbox too early, or like before lunch, or hey, I'd sneak in, walk into the bay. It's about what you tolerate, and I think it's accountability from the very, very lowest probie explorer firefighter, all the way up to the fire chief, because you are what you check at the end of the day. I'm not going to white glove my guys, but I mean, I'm also not afraid to hop up on the rig and hey, check the speed lays or check the hose loads, and spot check them, because that's that normalization of deviance. If you know, that's that nice SAT thing that's kind of popular right now, is you do one thing kind of like you do everything. So I've always been a get there in the morning, check your stuff, check your truck, clean the bathrooms. Let's get all the crud out of the way. Let's knock it all out. But the way that the guys treat their personal equipment is going to be the way they treat the fire truck. The way they treat the fire truck is going to be the way they treat the firehouse. The way they clean the toilet is going to be the way they clean their gear, clean their mask, you know, making sure their gloves are ready, making sure they're, for lack of a better term, my brother Nick Martin out there, he's one of my mentors that I still occasionally call now. You know, be combat ready. If you're not ready to roll out on a call, that is priority number one. And that is, like I said, something that I try to instill and build into our culture. But at a meeting I had back at the end of last year, I said, my role in creating a culture is about done. I've set my standards. Everybody knows where I am. All the leadership, the officers know what my standard is. It is now more up to them to execute that. And if they need help executing that, because I'm maxed out on my influence, I think, because I can't go back behind you and be the easy button, if you will. And if I correct a fireman, all I'm doing is undermining the battalion chief and the captain and the lieutenant on the engine. I'm undermining the entire process. Just like, you know, I have to sell that shit sandwich sometimes from council or manager or even the fire chief, whoever that is. I mean, everybody's got a boss. Now I can ease that. I can support you in getting it done. I can help you fight it, or I can be the guy fighting it. But like you said, it really starts at the firefighter level. And my advice for a guy, just because, again, I've been there, I've had the shitbag officer, and I say I'm not usually passive aggressive, I'm aggressive aggressive. So like, if I know that we want to go somewhere, we want to go do some training, we want to go do some pre-plans, we're going to go stretch some lines, I would go into that lackluster officer's office. You know, typically they're kicked up watching TV or Jenny Jones, or you know what rerun of, you know, Judge Judy, whatever they're doing, watching their stories. And I would say, hey, Cap, we're taking the engine out to the front pad, or I'm gonna pull it over to the side over here. We're gonna be pulling some lines. You want to come join us? Give them the opportunity. You know, hey, I'm doing this. I'm not really asking permission. Unless you say, no, we're about to do whatever, or oh, I forgot, we got to do a demo or whatever. Like, I'm going to go do this respectfully, and I would love for you to come out and join us. I think it would mean a lot. And it might not work the first time, might not work the second time, but the third or fourth time you go in there and do that, but you too have to go and take the lead at some point. There's a leadership vacuum. Said, if you're the guy who's identifying it, a lot of times you're the best one to fix the problem. And it's tough because people, like I said, everybody's got a boss. Everybody's scared of getting written up, fired, whatever. But hey, I've been written up. I've had an ass chewing. I've been fired. It does suck. But if you're doing the right things for the right reasons, it's all okay. 100%, because that's not whom I serve. I serve the public, and I serve those beside me, above me, below me. I preach servant leadership. You know, if I'm a Jocko nerd, I love it, that you lead up and down the chain of command, but you take care of the team stuff first. When you get back from a fire, the first thing you're doing, well, other than making sure your air pack's full, because getting ready for that next job, but in order to support the team, your gear's got to be squared away. Time you get your immediate stuff squared away, you get the team stuff squared away, you get the truck squared away. I'm not worried about the fire station. I'm not worried about the demo. Hey Cap, you mind calling? We got that demo. We're probably not going to be able to make it, or tell them we're going to be late because we got to re-rack this hose and get this stuff back ready. To me, that's that litmus test of if that officer balks at you and says, "No, we got to get to this demo. Get your pretty shirt on, shine your badge, let's go." That's where, hey, it might be time to pull that guy aside and say, "We got to get this truck back in service first. You get the team gear squared away, then you worry about getting a shower, getting comfortable, changing uniform. Then we do the demo. Demos are very important. Being out in the community is epically important, but there's only one department, there's only one service that puts out fires. That's the fire department. We got EMS. EMS can run the med call, but if I'm not ready to fight a fire and a fire comes in, guess what? Someone's losing that, at minimum, losing their stuff in their home or their business. At worst, they're losing their life or getting hurt. So it's all about prioritizing to me. And as long as you're, like I said, doing the right things for the right reason, and you're prioritizing getting out the door, making sure the guys have what they need to do that job, you're winning. You're gonna win at life. You're gonna win at home. If you're prioritizing your spouse and your children, great. Now you got to do something for yourself too. If you got to go play a round of golf every 2 weeks and that's your thing for mental health, you got to do it. But that's, again, that's, like I said, marriage and having children and being a father and helping run a family is the ultimate team. And if we translate that into the firehouse, we like to call each other family a whole lot, but we don't necessarily always treat each other like family. We throw around brother a lot, but at the end of the day, are you really there when they need you? Am I really looking out for my brother? Am I calling my captain brother, but then I'm going out, getting in trouble, getting a DUI, or, I put him in a bad situation where he's my friend and we're drinking buddies on Saturday night, but I'm going to show up late to work, or I'm going to, no, I'm not going to, enter policy infraction here. Then I'm going to get mad at him for having to write me up. I can't do that. And again, I say, you're not my brother. You're not being a good teammate if you're putting me in the position to have to do my job at the bugles, or that my position. You're making me have to do it. I hate it. I hate paperwork. I hate paperwork. I'd rather take an ass chewing than paperwork all day long. But you just got to be a good teammate, period. And that's, like I said, I go to that with home life and at work. Because if things aren't good at home, they're not going to be good at work. If things aren't good at work, guess what? You're going to bring it home, and girlfriend, boyfriend is going to take the brunt of that. Wife or husband's going to take the brunt of that, and that's not good. It's a distraction, and then you're not all there.
Absolutely. Okay. let's hit on the leadership, company officer, chief officer, because you're currently in the chief officer's role now, but you had the privilege in the past as company officer. So what does leadership look like to you, and what kind of leader do you want to be?
I have a document that I wrote down a while back, when I took a battalion chief position, and it was promises I made to myself. And I said, I want to be the chief that I would want to work for. Whether that's on the fire scene, whether that's around the firehouse, and I try to stay true to that as much as I can. But at the end of the day, I gotta be honest. And there are those days where everybody's got a boss, and I got to sell that shit sandwich, like I said. And what I hope that, my subordinates would do is everybody take a bite. I'm gonna take the lion's share of the bite of that shit sandwich. It's gonna taste bad, but if you help me eat it, I hope that I have proven to y'all, based on performance, based on what y'all have seen, or my reputation, that I'm not asking you to do this on a whim. That they know by the time it came down, I've fought for them. And at the end of the day, I may have lost, or I may have won in, two out of the five areas, but hey, city manager says we got to do this. I can battle it. I can make my case. But at the end of the day, everybody's got that boss. We got to do it. So I would say, kind of like I said earlier, be a good teammate and understand and trust that your officer or your chief officer is fighting for you above them. You're not going to be able to see it. But, I always say I'm like a duck, or I'm trying to change that now to I'm a human Roomba, where when I just hit something, I just keep going. But overall, I try to keep calm on the surface, but underneath I'm paddling like hell, to make it just a couple extra feet in the right direction. And it's hard some days. It is. And, I said it, leadership and being in those positions is not an easy job. And like going back to your point, some of the best leaders had no positional power that I've worked with. That old salty backstep guy that's got 5, 6 years or more can really have influence when the captain says, "Hey, we're going to pull a 2.5," and he says, "Hey, Cap, I think we can get it with the inch and a half. I think we can get it with that." Or, "Hey, yeah, go ahead and pull that inch and a half," or, "Go ahead and pull the cross lane." It's like, "Hey, no, Cap, I think we need to deck gun it first." Like, that's what you're there for as a senior person. Don't let me mess up. I need my battalion chiefs to check me, just as I'm there to help check my fire chief. I can't let my fire chief fail. If that's having a tough conversation and putting myself out there to the fire chief, hey, that's what I got to do. And that was the expectations that when I took the assistant chief job, I said, "Chief, I'm a high maintenance prima donna in some of this stuff. Like, I'm going to call you out and I want you to call me out. Like, but because if you fail, then I fail and I don't like to fail. So I'm not going to let you fail." So I think is the basis for most leadership in my mind, is not letting each other fail and mentoring and shoring up, creating the best team you can, and putting people in the right positions, and then getting them ready to take the next to ne take the next position.
Now, I love what you said, but then again, too, I know, and I'm sure you know, and listeners know, chiefs out there who, when you try to do that, just so they don't fail, they don't see it because they're blinded because it's like, well, I'm the fire chief. And it's like, we get that. But like, and it's something I've learned coming up through the years, like, everybody could be your friend, right? We all want friends, but how many of us truly want friends that are going to be able to stop you and go, listen, it's not a good move. You're messing up, or you have messed up, and this is what you need to do to fix it. And to me, if you don't want to hear that, then you don't need to be that person's friend. You don't need to have them in your corner as a friend. You can't, being a leader doesn't mean that you can't take advice from someone who's not on your level. And I think sometimes we have chiefs that fail to see that. Well, because you're not on that organizational chart with me, you can't tell me that. And it's like, well, if you truly want what's best for you or your organization, sometimes you're gonna have to swallow that pill from someone that's not on your level, that's telling you you're messing up.
Oh yeah, like I said, I go back to Jocko, and I've implemented it and I've seen it. Ego.
Ego,
Ego
killer.
is the root of most evil, period. Is I'm in it for me. I'm in it for me. And so, one thing that I had that gut punch, 3.5, four, almost well, almost 4 years ago now, of, "Hey, reset button. What did I do?" And I said, "Now's the time. I'm going to be the practitioner. I gotta practice what I preach." I've, taught some conferences, and I've written some checks. And now it's like, hey, do I have the stomach to cash them myself? And do I get to look in the mirror and say, "Hey, I'm blaming the whole world for what just happened," or do I get to say, "Shit, I messed up. Where did I go wrong? Let me work this back. Let me work the problem from the back." And where I started, once I did that, and I said, "Hey, how do I teach other people to do that? Well, how do you do pump calculation? If you're Dennis LeGear, how do you do flow rates? Where do you
Right.
start? You start at the pump, or you start at the nozzle? How do I set up my nozzle package? What do I need to come out of that hole 200 feet downrange? I start there. That's where my calculation starts." So that's where you are. That's where your ego is. If that ego is anything other than whatever, say 210 gallons a minute, that's my ego. I don't have to have 210 gallons a minute to put out a fire. I have to have it well placed, but I got to start there and look at introspectively of how did I contribute to said problem. And I think leadership is an overused term, just like aggressive and some of these other key words, but we don't really know what it actually means. And humility and ego are the two things that, that's the yin and yang. Ego can get you in so much trouble, but humility can get you out of a lot of trouble.
I'm with
That
you.
makes sense.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. And I see that in my experience, ego can tear a department apart. It can tear friendships apart. And I just like the way I look at it is, I don't know it all. And I tell people that, like, hey, this is not my strong suit. I like to stay in my lane. But like, if you see that there's a deficiency and you try to say, hey, like, hey, this isn't right, or you could tweak this here or there, and then that ego comes up, well, who are you to tell me? Or you know what I mean? It's just I don't know what we can do to fix that, but I firmly love that there are chief officers out there like you yourself that sees that and wants people to go, hey, it wasn't a good look what you did or what happened or whatever the case may be, and then you digest it. Think over and go, yep, that person was right. I'm gonna fix it.
So you said something there. You said try. You said effort, right? I think
Right.
as long as you know you're trying, I can tell you I've had to, like I said, even with guys in the last 6 months, I've had to swallow some ego and swallow some pride and say, hey, you know what? I messed up a little bit there. I firmly believe after it being introspective, what I was doing was 100% right. I am right in this. The way I presented it and the way I talked to you was completely wrong, and I apologize. And I've seen that, and it's not a secret. I've seen that as a problem with municipalities, or the municipality I currently work for, is for that we're on the upswing. We're really doing a great job now, but maybe I'm seeing that the leadership before it's, and we talked a little bit about it before we started recording, is. As long as you're not a problem sometimes, as long as you're getting told you're in that chamber of echoes that, oh yeah, chief, everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine. Nope, the trucks are good. Nope, the gear's good. Meanwhile, you as that person that's telling them that, you're just telling them what they want to hear. Sometimes they need to hear that tough pill. And I mean, there's been two times in the last 5 years, I've literally put my badge on the table and I said, maybe I'm not the right guy for this job. So we celebrate, and maybe I don't know all the story behind it, but the drawing another brain fart on the fire chief that just went up in front of council and stepped down from his position because he said I no longer can do this job. And that's where I've been lucky that the I'm batting 500 with that one, is when I've kind of put my badge on the table and saying, hey, why am I here then? Just put me back on, and you have to be ready for that. And you got to be ready for that with your family. And my wife hates it, because there's been four or five times in our relationship when I said I'm thinking about it, and she's like, oh hell, not again, because I have this weird problem. I don't say it's a problem, but when I get convicted about something, I can't physically step down from it. Like I can't bring myself to do it because I answer to God number one. And I can't go to sleep at night knowing that I didn't do everything I could for that situation. Next, I answer to my family. And if I can come home and hang my head high and say, hey, today I got shit canned, but I did it for the right reasons and I did the best I could. I prepped the best I could. I had those other options out there. And I know not everybody can do that. And I understand that. But maybe instead of saying, I'm just going to get fired today, say, hey, I'm not the right guy for this position. When another one opens up, when that captain's position opens up again, I'm going to step down. Just to give you, go ahead, put it out there. If you want to find somebody else that wants to be your yes man, that's on you. But I can't work in this anymore. And that's the last resort, because you don't want to do that, because then who are they going to put in place?
Yes, man.
The yes man. So part of moving up is politics, but you also got to do that from the firefighter standpoint, especially if you're at a department with multiple stations, because they'll just move your ass. I've seen that dozens upon dozens upon dozens of times. Cool, you're gonna be down here at headquarters and you're gonna chew on the chief's ear every time he walks down here. Cool, I'm just gonna move you out to the slow county station that runs 28 calls a year. You know, good luck being a tanker driver, asshole. And again, where does that come from? Is ego. Instead of pulling that guy aside and saying, "Hey, the way you're presenting this is wrong. You're right. You might be right in what you're saying, but the way you're presenting it is completely wrong." And it's one thing. I was vice president of our local when I was at Columbia, and it took me a little bit to understand that is it's not the local's job, especially at a place that doesn't have like a collective bargaining or a contract, to fight for pay all the time and to fight for these big things. Where me and got a guy named, Nicholas and Sean and Jake, what we fought for is that executive board. We realized that pretty early on. Like, hey, I can't just march in the chief's office or go march into the mayor's office and be like, we need 17% across the board per your study you did. They're going to say, yeah, good luck with that. See you later. What we can do, we can figure out what culturally we can do to make the job better. Hey, do we need better beds? Do we need better this? Can we host training events? What do the guys want that can make their lives better? I see the same thing. I know in South Carolina, we have 1% money. This is mainly meant for kind of volunteer stuff, but it's meant for recruitment, retention, and making your daily life better or bolster retirement. That's kind of the ways you can do it. And I'm all for using that money to get the nicer couch, the nicer Sleep Number beds, the extrication jackets, better gloves. Hey, yeah, the department does Class A's, but we can't afford hats and hat badges. Well, guess what? 1% money can pay for that. Or let's do a fundraiser. Let's let the local supply that. But guys, just gotta, like, again, tax dollars only go so far. Same, we're all fighting for the same pot of money, whether it's PD, police, or PD, fire, wastewater, whoever. Everybody's in it for the right. For everybody's fighting for that pot. So how do we supplement it? Like you said, going back to that culture thing, I can't necessarily always give you the monetary value you deserve. But how do we work around that? How do we form some 501c? And that's what guys don't understand. When they take that leadership role in a local, or have their own company or whatever it is, form a foundation, it's a very, very thankless job. And no one can tell you how much work it is, and no one will fully appreciate everything you do. And that's at every level, but it's a lot of work. A lot of work. And it's not about, like I said, I have one piece of advice for anybody in like a local position or anything else. Unless you just find yourself in a real interesting spot, it takes years to go up and ask for something serious like a pay raise. Because even for a 20, 30 person department, you're asking for hundreds of thousands of dollars. This isn't 2%. This is $190,000 of recurring cost. And that is really, really tough to see. I didn't see it as a fireman. I'll be honest with you. It took me a long time to see that. But that's where call a mentor, call Chicago's union, call Florida, call Texas. Those guys do this stuff all the time. I mean, there's some big names out there, too many to list, that would be happy to talk to you about how to negotiate some contracts or how to ask for stuff. But use those agencies, use those organizations to bolster what the guys need culturally, not necessarily just to fight for benefits all the time. Make the benefits something a little more tangible that they can see.
Okay, love it, love it. I want to kind of ask you how the whole Soda City came together.
Oh boy. Yeah, so for lack of a better term, let's see, it was 2017, 18-ish. Me and my brother, old Jason Joannidis, aka JJ, the squirrel that is on crack cocaine most of the time, I think. Not actually, but you would think so. He is all la natural, trust me, but he is just a spitball, man. I mean, a spitfire. We're kind of yin and yang in that sense, but We kind of saw an opportunity. We were doing some stuff here and there together, training. He came out of the training division at Columbia, got assigned to me at 7, and we were sitting down one night, and it's like, hey, what do you think about this doing our own thing? The State Fire Academy at the time was struggling with some things. We saw an opening to kind of form our own training company, and said, you know what, we're not doing this to make any money right now. At the time, I got 10, 12 years till retirement. He's got about the same, so let's get it going, and let's just make enough money to keep going and build it so that maybe in 10, 12, 15 years, when we go to retire, we got something. And like I said, we're doing it right things for the right reasons and kind of challenging that status quo a little bit. I think that's been proven. JJ has been the heartbeat of Soda City for the last year or two now, especially with the acquired building stuff. He's hard to keep up with, especially since I went 9 to 5. He's got energy, man, and I support him every way we can. But the way it really got going was just we saw a gap and we wanted to do, like I said, the right thing and create good, realistic training that you didn't necessarily get at your department, or you didn't get at the fire academy, given the parameters that they have to work under. There are some things that private companies can do that these larger agencies can't. And I get that. And we're never going to, publicly shame them in any way, because the fixed facility training, I mean, they got to pump out recruits. They got to do their thing. They have to meet that standard. And that's perfectly fine. I'm not trying to say that they are substandard by any stretch, but how do we go a little bit above and beyond that? How do we take that basic training and then supercharge it with some realistic stuff? Like we challenge, like ch started challenging the status quo of live burns in South Carolina. You can't do those. Well, YouTube says otherwise because this department, this department, this department are burning. Oh, well, they didn't go through the right channels. They didn't meet the NFPA standards. Okay, well, how do we do it? And how do we do it the right way? How do we do it where it's still safe, nutritious, and fun, and still meet the standards that we need to, and progress and make people challenge what they're just told they can't do it. Well, does that really mean you can't do it? Or does that mean you're going off of information you were told by, like you said, that old fire chief who just doesn't want to do it? So we started kind of becoming an outlet for people. During COVID, that kind of turned into Truck Company Misfits podcast, which we've been a little dormant here working on some other stuff. And I tell people, I know I lost a lot of steam after Jay died. That was a rough one for all of us. He had just came on with us as part of our cadre, and that took a lot of the wind out of our sails, but we've turned that into the live fire and the Mayday Writ stuff that just got completed last week, and trying to really honor him in a lot of what we do. So the long and short of it is it started out as kind of something to have an outlet for us and to, go to conferences, challenge some people, get our message out there, and maybe have something in a few years that we make some money at. Who knows? Because I promise you, $0 have been put into my account or JJ's account since starting this thing. Every single penny has been put back into either buying a saw or creating the next class. And bear with us, those of you out there who see the Facebook post and see some of the prices for our stuff. Like we just said about fire trucks, it's expensive to do any damn thing out there now. And logistics is hard. Making sure there's water and food and enough Zen for everybody is really tough sometimes. But we're doing the best we can, and we keep pushing the envelope. And sometimes we fall short on logistics, and that's okay, I hope. But overall, that's kind of the business model we've pursued. And every year, this we're going through it right now during tax time, is we get slapped on the wrist by our CPA. Of keep better records because we're firemen, and I need the credit card. Where's the credit card? Oh, you just why did you buy $180 worth of pizzas? Well, we were hungry. Okay, crap. Okay. Where's that money coming from? Okay. But that's one of the things that putting on classes or putting forth a conference, the guys at MAFSE, Twisted Fire and Joe that do Carolina Fire Days, that is a year and a half out. They're already planning, next year's right now, and it's 18 months out. They're planning 2026. It is a giant undertaking, and we're blessed, and I'm honored to be a small part of that and teaching some of those classes and helping where I can. But just like anything else with any association, any actual position, when you take on that responsibility, it's a big responsibility, and it's a lot of times it's thankless. So it would go a long way if next time you're at a conference, that guy over in the corner that's doing logistics, or the people that are running that conference or running that training event, go over and shake their hand and say thank you, because it's a thankless job in that sense. If it goes right or wrong, because it's a lot of work, it's a lot of phone calls, a lot of texts. So,
All right.
yeah.
My last question for you. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
I gotta hang it up.
I mean, you don't have to. You can go as long as
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I don't know. I don't know how Casey does it as far as like age requirements, but I'm sure you'll get to a certain point where you're like, all right, the body's like, hey, bro, you've done enough, I'm done. But where would you like to see yourself before you get to that point?
At the moment, like I said, I don't really see it as hanging up. I look at it as like, maybe where do I see the next chapter going?
Sure.
And that's maybe I kind of I'm very lucky right now. I can kind of cherry pick the calls I want to go on. I can go what I want to go on. I get the opportunity sometimes to hop on and ride the rig when we're down a guy for class or a shift or whatever. Flu comes around and I've had to pull a couple of shifts. It's fine. I don't mind doing it. I love doing it. It keeps me plugged in.
You do that?
What's the alternative?
Hey man, I'm just asking because like you don't hear very many. I mean, I have, but the number of chiefs that will say, "Yeah, I'll grab my gear and hop on a truck for a shift or a couple hours," like you, at least in my experience, you don't really hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I stay plugged in. I mean, not to get too far off topic with that one, but like I said, I really believe it's mission first. And if I am able-bodied and I can hop on that truck and ride for whether it's 30 minutes or an hour, all day, all night, whatever it is, if I can work it out, that's what matters. I mean, as long as I think enough toilet paper and guys don't miss a paycheck, I think everything else in my job can be put on pause to ride for a day or two. And like I said, it does keep me plugged in. Like I said, maybe a sidebar for a minute. About 2 years ago, after I'd been in the position about a year, I noticed that something was missing, because I used to get off shift, go home, grab a little bite to eat, and then go to the gym. And then my second day off, it was, hey, woke up, better drop the kids off at school, did whatever I need to do, go to the gym. And that was my outlet, mental health wise. Not even saying like you just want to get jacked and juicy. I mean, that's always a good reason to, but I didn't realize how much just getting a little quick sweat on, whether it's 20 minutes or an hour and 45 minutes, getting in there and just doing it. So I've had to go to my fire chief and I said, hey, if we're requiring the guys to, work out while on duty, which every day I let them. And I say let, I encourage them to work out. And we have a gym at the station, and whether it's running around the block, whatever, they gotta do something. That's walk and talk, don't care, go play basketball, lift, whatever. And I went to him, I said, hey, I'm missing that though in my life. Like I got some anger. Like I didn't realize how much frustration I got out just doing some deadlifts or whatever. So that's kind of been in my routine. Like this morning, got up to the girls' school, Went straight to the gym, knocked out a had like 45 minutes so that I could do it. Got caught by a train, so it ended up being about 30 minutes. But then got home, and I start my day after that. But I'm a big believer in fitness, and that plays into a big part of it for mental health for me. My wife will tell you, she knows when I hadn't gone to the gym or I hadn't gone for a run. She knows it. She can sense that change because that's where I get my frustration out. Put in my AirPods and, listen to some music and just unplug for just a second. And it was actually interrupted Thursday morning. I looked down and got an alert for a house fire. And so I dropped everything and I ran to the house fire where the guys kicked it in the teeth. Citizens actually made a grab before we got there. It was awesome. But yeah, I think it's extraordinarily important to stay plugged in with the guys. Not that you have to go in there and go toe to toe with them, but you have to encourage it. And if they see me doing it, like I said, I try to be a mentor. I try to, not just talk about it, but be about it to a certain extent. I shouldn't, especially. I always tell them, like, if I can beat you masking up, that's a problem. I'm an admin, man. I mask up, but I won't even put a number on it. A lot less than you guys do. I shouldn't be as good at pulling that line as you are, but I need to know how to do it. I need to have a good enough understanding that when they come to me and say, "Hey, this line's no longer working," then I have to roll my ego back and say, just because that's the load I used and I came up with it doesn't mean it's the best. Now, let's pull them both 20 times and let's see which one's the best after 20. Or why don't we do the top line with the Minuteman and the bottom line with a flat load. Let's see which one's better for our area. Let's see which be or we leave them like that and it's situationally based. I love thinking firemen. No house fire is the same, no medical call is the same, no wreck's the same. So that's why I am a big proponent of SOGs, not SOPs. Here's the box. Here's where you operate within it on a normal call of this nature. But here's your freedom. If you deviate from this, you just got to give me a good reason why. That's it. You have flexibility. You have autonomy. I'll sing my fire chief's praises from the mountaintops. He gives me a lot of autonomy, and I appreciate that. I kind of, for lack of a better term, I get to do what I need to do or I want to do on a daily basis. But at the same time, I know the parameters that he's set. I know I can't push the envelope here or there. I know where I got to stay, but also I have a lot of lateral movement. And that's what I try to push down to the officers below me is I'm not going to set your day for you. Here's what you got to get done. The order in which you do it is up to you. I can tell you what works for me. And then I monitor it and I say, hey, you kind of deviated from this. I'd really like to see you go back to this because, CBA is not working. Let's try BAC. And I can give advice and I really try to hold back the bugle power as much as I can, unless it's something that's truly affecting the service. If it's not affecting the service, if my idea is at 99% and their idea is at 92%, guess what? We're going with your idea because you already bought into it. So that going back to the original question, sorry, rabbit hole. Where I see myself is staying plugged in for as long as I can. Rest in peace, Bill Gustin. I was, I believe at least one of those photos that circulated, I was sitting a few rows over for him while he's sitting there taking notes. And I noticed that, but then somebody put that into, much more eloquent wording on Facebook posts than I ever could have. But being that student of the game, of constantly challenging yourself, wanting to do better, going to classes, I still would like to pop in on anybody's class, your podcast, anything that's out there that I can continually kind of challenge myself with. That's where I see myself. I don't really have a plan per se. I got about four and some change left before I get my retirement, and then I can really be a pain in the ass because I can get the retirement board before they can fire me. And we'll see where that goes from there. But at the moment, I'm gonna ride out. I'm gonna ride this horse as long as they'll have me. And I won't say it's a fallback plan, but going back to like the Soda City stuff. I mean, that's the fallback plan. That's where, if I can continue to make a difference and just facilitate, not even necessarily host, just help people facilitate some training or, get invited to go ride along somewhere. Hey, I'm gonna keep going to the gym. My cardio is not where it once was because I ride a desk a lot of days, but I can still, I'm as good once as I ever was, as the old song says. But yeah, the long and short of it is, I don't know. I don't know if retirement's on the ball game or really, really on the radar as far as the fire service goes. I think I would love to stay plugged in as long as they'll have me, like I said. And from there, maybe take my experiences and move it into private sector. I said, seeing what some of the military guys have done. There's some really great police officers out there that have done consulting work. I really enjoy doing some of that and sharing the lessons learned from what we do in split second. Let's slow it down and see how other people can learn from it.
Okay. Love your answer. Love your answer. I will say thank you for taking time out of your day to do this. I have thoroughly loved the conversation we have. I also just want you to know, don't ever change the way you view the fire service, regardless of the title on your shirt. You're still a fireman and you still remember that. And I believe like we have. There are a number of officers out there, whether you're a lieutenant, captain, and up all the way to the top. Like at some point, these individuals seem to disconnect from that and they forget. And I think when you forget, how you treat people, how you do things will speak volumes to the rest of the troops that do see. Because that's the thing, too. Like the higher you go, like firemen are very really good detectives. Like they are going to notice things, they're going to see things. And to me, the simple fact that if you can, and I understand not all administration chiefs can do that, but if you can have some time to like, hey, this person, they'll be back here shortly. It's either we're going to have to move somebody from across town, or this truck's going to have to go down, or God forbid, we're going to have to ride down through whatever the case may be. And that individual steps up and goes, no, I'll just ride the truck for a little bit. I think that right there will speak volumes to a lot of other people in the organization. They'll be like, wow, like, hey, this individual is still plugged in. So thank you for doing that and for being yourself.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's been an honor, and I just like to close with everything I say is literally robbed or stolen from my mentors or somebody that I've heard it from. It's just one opinion from one guy, and so much like training, don't go to a conference and think that nozzle forge is the only way to pull lines and
That's
fight
right.
fire.
That's right.
Take whatever I say as a grain of salt and move on with it. Don't just implement aggressive aggressive and go tell your fire chief that this is what we're going to do, or don't walk into your officer's office this afternoon and say, yo Cap, we're pulling lines, eat it. I don't recommend that. Ask me how I know.
There's a way you gotta do it though.
Exactly.
That's the biggest thing. Like there's a way you have to do it. And sometimes I'm not gonna say it's always gonna be pretty. It's definitely not gonna be easy. It's gonna be difficult. But at the end of the day, I think as long as you do it tactfully, of course, but as long as the individual can lay their head at night, like you said, if you can go like, hey, I did this, I'm sticking with it, and I'm comfortable with my decision, then that's you have nothing else to prove to anybody else. You know what I mean? Like it's all on what you believe. If you believe what you did was right, then it is what it is.
Amen.
I appreciate you, pal. Thank you for taking time out of your day to do this. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com.
Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.